Good afternoon, happy Easter, and welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. I'm Karen Curtis, and I'm here again today, as we are each Sunday at noon, with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates PA, a law firm practicing community association law throughout Florida. As our listeners know, we are here each week to answer all of your calls and emails about the issues that make life in your condominium or HOA absolutely crazy from one minute to the next. As always, we would love to get the phone lines going early, answering all of your questions. So give us a call right here in our studio at 877-850-8585. Again, that's 877-850-8585. Or if you prefer to email us your questions, you can do so by visiting the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and by clicking on the email the show tab.
And of course, even if you don't want to send us an email, you should still visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com, where you can listen to all of our past shows, sign up for our free seminars, which we'll get into in a minute. You can see who the show's sponsors are and visit all of their websites. You could link to our Facebook page and join our email list and get copies of our newsletters and other weekly announcements about the show. And of course, if you'd like to call our law firm directly and pick our brains off the air, you can call Glazer and Associates at 855 the number 4 Condo Craze. Again, 855 the number 4 Condo Craze. And you can visit the law firm's website at condo-laws.com. Again, that's condo-laws.com. And again, thank you to so many of you for supporting the Community Association Member Party this year. As you know, another legislative session came to a close with absolutely no help for Floridians living in a community association. In fact, it was just the opposite. And, of course, we'll certainly try again next year to get some legislation passed. But to find out more how you can get involved and demand long overdue changes to both the condo and HOA statutes, please visit www.camp2012.net. That's www.camp2012.net.
And so how was the Condo Craze seminar on Thursday at the Hard Rock?
I tell you, what a great event it was, Karen. Again, we had a packed house for our board certification course, and everybody really seemed to enjoy it. And how about this figure? We have now certified over 2,400 Floridians to serve on a Florida Condominium Board of Directors.
That is big.
Yes.
And I heard you had a surprise guest.
Yes, we certainly did, Karen. On the morning of the seminar, I actually sent out an invitation to all members of the Florida Legislature, of course, hoping that some legislator out there would actually take an interest into the concerns of Floridians who live in community associations. And Senator Eleanor Sobel did show up, and she sat down with everybody, and she listened to the seminar, and she listened to all the questions everybody had. And I got to tell you, for that, Senator Sobel gets a big thank you from me and deserves a thank you, quite frankly, from all Floridians for at least showing some interest in the difficulties facing owners and community associations in Florida. And ironically, when I was speaking to her privately outside, she tells me that she served on her condominium board for about 10 years, and she now thinks that actually being a senator may be a little less nerve-wracking than actually being president of a condo board, if you can believe that.
Yeah. Well, you know, Eric, there's some big news, and that big news is that we're heading west again, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to give the Condo Craze board member certification course in Bonita Springs.
Yeah, that's right, Scott. We're heading west to Bonita Springs, and we're going to be there on May 11th at 9 o'clock a.m. at the Bonita Springs Chamber of Commerce. They were gracious enough to allow us to use their wonderful facilities. So a big thank you goes out to the Bonita Springs Chamber of Commerce, and we really look forward to packing your chamber with fans of the show on May 11th. And if anybody actually wants to see photos of the Condo Craze seminars and how we roll over there, just go to Facebook and search for Condo Craze and HOAs, and lots of pictures are up on the site. Be sure to click the like button to become a fan of the show. And if you want to register for the Bonita Springs seminar, just go to www.condocrazeandhoas.com, www.condocrazeandhoas.com, and Brian, our office manager, will send you confirmation that you are, in fact, registered.
And I understand that you have a bunch of smaller private seminars, too, on the horizon.
Yeah, some in our office this week, too, as a matter of fact. And as we've done many times now, we can actually have a private seminar for your board and get your board certified. And, in fact, we have two coming up for boards in Hollywood and in Inverary. Again, it's a fantastic opportunity to not only get certified, but a great time to talk about what your association needs and demands from their law firm in the year ahead. And again, it's all free of charge.
Last show, we spoke about Florida having one-fourth of all of the foreclosures in the entire country, how our clerks of court are bracing for a budget cut of 7% from the Florida legislature. We gave everyone an amazing update on the Las Vegas HOA scandal and how witnesses are disappearing faster than your money does at the craps table. And we spoke about how Lynn Simoniak, who uncovered the robo-signing scandal, was generously rewarded with an $18 million settlement.
Yeah, how about in light of this holiday weekend, it being both Passover and Easter. We start with a story today coming out of Connecticut that is no doubt appropriate for today's show. And this topic always seems to pop up and rear its ugly head now and then. And it's about a woman who owns and lives in a condominium in Connecticut. And she received a gift of a mezuzah from a friend and proceeded to hang it on the frame of her door.
Not one of these stories.
Yes,
huh?
Yeah.
We did this before.
Yes, we did.
In Connecticut, though. And for everybody that's celebrating Easter today that doesn't know what a mezuzah is, it's a small rectangular-shaped religious symbol that Jewish people typically put on the frame of their door and not on the door itself.
Yeah, well, you can see where this is going. The owner is now being fined $50 per day by her condo association because the condo docs don't allow for the placement of a mezuzah on the door frame. Now, her next-door neighbor, though, has a Happy Easter wreath with a bunny on the door, actually on the door itself, and she's allowed to keep it there. And believe it or not, this is all because of a prohibition in the bylaws of the condominium that says an owner can hang a religious symbol on their door, but they can't hang it on the door frame.
I remember that we spoke about this on the show. Doesn't Florida have a law that says completely the opposite?
Yeah, Florida's law is completely the opposite, Karen. And here is what Florida's law actually says. It says an association may not refuse the request of a unit owner for a reasonable accommodation for the attachment on the mantle or frame of the door of the unit owner of a religious object not to exceed 3 inches wide, 6 inches high, and 1.5 inches deep.
Yeah, and that's usually about the size of a mezuzah,
exactly.
Unless it's one of those monster ones that I've seen in Hollywood. So in Florida, this unit owner, if she lived in a condo, she'd have the right to put the mezuzah up on the frame of her door. But, here's the thing, Eric. She used to have a senator that I'm pretty sure has a mezuzah on his door in Connecticut. So maybe he can call some of his old friends in the state legislature.
That's true.
And maybe Joe and his lovely wife, Hadassah, can lobby the Connecticut legislature to get this law passed.
That's true.
Now, is the law in Florida the same if you live in an HOA? Well,
here's what's funny. Ironically, Karen, if you live in a condominium in Florida, you have this right to display a religious symbol. But if you live in an HOA, you don't. And it's really amazing that the Florida legislature never put this into the actual HOA statute. So those of you living in a community association here in Florida, from the staff here at Condo Craze and HOAs, we wish you only the best and happiest Easter and Passover to all of you and all your families today. But as you know, Glazer and Associates, we often represent the associations. So bottom line, you now have 10 minutes to remove pictures of your bunnies and your Easter eggs from the front of your door, or you will be evicted. We have pictures of each and every one of you, and we know who you are.
And if you live in an HOA, remove that mezuzah, or Lord help you.
And by the way, though, in the spirit of the holiday, your boards of directors want to tell each of you that they wish you peace on earth and goodwill towards men on this lovely holiday weekend.
All right, well, that sounds great. Well, how about telling everybody that you want to retract what you said on the air last week about the new Marlins stadium?
Oh.
Well, I remember last week how I kind of tore into the Marlins and their new stadium, and I was somewhat upset by the fact that they built this place with just enough parking spaces for like a few toy cars, and of course that it was built with all taxpayer money. Well, let me tell you what happened this week. I went to an exhibition game against the Yankees earlier in the week because a good friend of mine and workers' comp attorney extraordinaire, Michael Zachary, has these seats that are like on the field.
Wow.
And they come with parking and all the food you can eat. And Mike was kind enough to take me to see the Yankees because he knows just how big of a Yankee fan I am. Well, I got to tell you, I went into the game, predetermined to come out basically cursing the Marlins, cursing the stadium, cursing the parking, and swearing that I just went to my first and last Marlins game. But I got to tell you what happened. after seeing this new Marlins stadium and the absolutely amazing place that it is, believe it or not, I absolutely cannot wait to go back to another game. Words cannot describe this place. It is fun. It's exciting. The retractable roof is amazing. There's not a bad seat in the house. It is a great place to watch a game. So for those of you who still swear that you'll never go to a Marlins game, I'm telling you, try it. Suck it up. Go and enjoy an afternoon or a night of baseball in this air-conditioned stadium. You will not regret it. Just give it a try.
I just want to ask you about the aquarium behind home plate. Was that cool?
I saw the aquarium, right, and they say they tested it out, and it will not break if a foul ball actually hits it.
Unbelievable.
There will not be actually fish all over the field if Ramirez swings and misses or hits a foul ball into that thing. It is incredible. It is an awesome ballpark. Can't say enough about it. And remember all the talk over the last few weeks about whether or not the banks that foreclose have to pay more to the association than 1 year or 1%? Well, let's do this. Let's take our first break, and when we get back, we're going to talk about how one Dade County judge recently ruled on this issue. We'll talk about a new prediction that a second wave of condo collapses is on the horizon. We'll talk about whether or not changes can be made to the condominium's common areas without a vote of the owners. And, of course, we'll talk about anything else on your mind involving your condo or HOA. Just give us a call here in the studio, 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585, and we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850 WFTL. I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro, taking your phone calls at 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. And by the way, if you have a product or service that would be beneficial to our listeners and want to be a guest on the show, attend our monthly seminars where you meet hundreds of different associations and be listed on the show's website and have a commercial spot during each week's show, you can become a sponsor of the show. Just visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and send us a quick email.
All right. As our listeners know, we've had lots of discussions lately about whether or not a bank who forecloses on a home in either a condominium or a homeowners association and actually takes back title to that unit, whether or not they're liable to the association for only the lesser of 1% of the mortgage or 1 year of unpaid assessments.
You know, a lot of discussions, but they all kind of end the same, at least from our side.
Right,
right,
exactly.
Eric? Sure. Well, you know, in fact, we spoke about the legislation that was pending in Tallahassee that would have made it crystal clear that the bank's liability is, in fact, limited in this fashion, which is called the Safe Harbor provision of Florida Statute 718.116. As our listeners know, this legislation failed because it died in the Senate.
And then, of course, we had the crew from Association Financial Services on this show, and they took the position that the banks are responsible for not just the safe harbor amounts, but also for the past due interest, late fees, and attorney's fees that are attributable to the unit. But if I remember, you stuck to your guns and thought that, like it or not, the banks were in fact protected.
Yeah, well, that's right, Karen. We went on record on that show and said that the statute does protect the banks, like it or not. And it turns out that on February 15th, Judge Joseph Farina in Miami, Dade County Courthouse and Circuit Court, he entered an order in a foreclosure case that agrees with the way we saw it on the show, and I'm going to read specifically what that order holds, and it involved a case regarding Ocean Bank. And Judge Farina writes, Ocean Bank has no liability to the condominium association for interest, late fees, attorney's fees, and costs which came due before Ocean Bank acquired title to the condominium units, and the bank's liability to the condominium association is limited to the lesser of 12 months of assessments or 1% of the original mortgage debt for each unit that they foreclose on.
Yeah, Eric, so, I think we should let everybody know out there that this is not a new law. This has been around for quite some time, and there really wasn't too much disagreement over it until the last couple of years where you've had, you know, newer law firms that practice community association work and some other third parties that are involved in helping community associations challenging it. But this is not something that really went questioned for basically the entire life of the law.
Right.
So, you know, we have Judge Farina's order here, and it seems that it's pretty crystal clear that in Dade County, the law is what it's always been, the lesser of 12 months or 1% of the note. Like it or not, the bank is protected and the bank's liability is limited.
Yeah, I'm with you. I agree.
Does this decision in Dade County have any effect on other courts throughout the state?
Yeah, it does not, Karen. It's only persuasive, really, at this point. But I think Scott and I absolutely expect that it's going to be followed by courts around the state. And perhaps eventually we will get into a decision by an appellate court on this issue so it can finally be put to bed once and for all. Moving on, I read this next story in the Sun Sentinel this week, and I got to tell you, I swear, I simply couldn't believe I was reading this again. They are predicting another collapse of condominiums on the horizon. Believe it or not, listen to this. Despite what we've been speaking about on the air for 2 years, there are more than two dozen condominium projects, including five in Broward and Palm Beach, being added to the South Florida skyline in the next few years. And by the end of 2012, as many as 10,000 more units could be in the planning stages here in South Florida.
Yeah, Eric, I read that same article, and you know what? It's the same people who built the last wave of stuff also. I think I saw George Perez was quoted in that article as well. Well, these developers are predicting that the market will be improved, with a demand for luxury units going very strong, especially, I believe it was from South American investors.
Exactly.
You know, it's always these magical South American investors that are going to bail everything out. Listen, I'm sure there are plenty, but I don't know if there's enough to buy up hundreds of thousands of condominium units. So go figure. A developer is insisting that there's high demand for a project and he wants to build. Not exactly a new concept.
Now, analysts are disagreeing with the developers, and they say that when most of these condos are ready for occupancy in 2014 or later, they will be competing with the leftover supply from the housing boom, creating a glut that threatens to send the recovering markets into another tailspin.
And that's who I'm agreeing with. And what's amazing is that the commissioners in all these cities, they approve project after project after project, really with still little or no opposition to any of the developers. And it's, of course, it's all simply to increase their tax base for their city, but really with little regard to the traffic concerns, the overcrowdings of the schools that we're dealing with, and the possibility of actually increasing the number of foreclosures in the community. The insanity is apparently continuing without a halt. But taking your calls here in the studio, 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. This week, here's an interesting topic. We were actually asked on the show about it last week from a caller, and we urged her to wait a week before we answer her question because we knew we were going to spend lots of time on this topic today. A condominium client of mine actually calls, and they ask me if they can take a tennis court and convert it to something other than a tennis court. And in a condominium setting, this actually brings up the issue of whether or not this change would be considered a material alteration, which would require a unit owner vote rather than simply a decision of the board of directors.
You want me to tell everybody what the statute says?
Please tell them.
718.113.2a provides that, except as otherwise provided in this section, there should be no material alterations or substantial additions to the common elements or to real property, which is association property, except in a manner provided in the declaration as originally recorded or as amended under the procedures provided therein. If the declaration as originally recorded or as amended under the procedures provided therein does not specify the procedure for approval of material alterations or substantial alterations, 75% of the total voting interest of the association must approve the alterations or additions. What's that in English, Eric?
That's a mouthful there. But generally speaking, bottom line, if something is a material alteration, a 75% vote of the unit owners is required. So the question becomes, at this point, what is a material alteration And that question really has been answered by our courts as follows here in Florida. A material alteration means to palpably or perceptibly vary or change the form, the shape, elements, or specifications of a building from its original design or plan or existing condition in such a manner as to appreciably affect or influence its function, use, or appearance. So let's do this. Let's give some quick examples of cases where arbitrators have held that certain changes are, in fact, material alterations that require a vote of the unit owners. Okay, right. So we're going to give you a bunch of cases now that talk about where arbitrators rule that these types of changes in your condo, they are material, the board can't do it by themselves, and a vote of the unit owners is, in fact, required. All right, a case called Borelli versus Ocean at Bluff South Condo. There, the arbitrator held that when the association sought to add a pool enclosure to the association property, it was considered a material alteration to the property and required a vote of the unit owners. The board couldn't do it without the unit owner's permission.
All right, I got an arbitrator's decision here that says if a condo wants to install a pool heater, that would be considered a material alteration to the common elements. They're not replacing a pool heater. Right. They're installing one.
Right, from scratch. Okay. It requires a unit owner vote.
You got to have hot water. In the pool, though, I don't know. In Flynn versus St. Regis Association of Sarasota, the arbiter found that the painting of the condominium building from white to two-tone terracotta color resulted in an alteration to the common elements, which required an approval by the unit owner.
I mean, I don't even know why they had a case over that. Everybody knows that white to two-tone terracotta is just the biggest change you could make.
Yeah, exactly. So again, all these things requiring a unit owner vote. Boards can't do this of their own volition. All right, a case involving Winston Towers 300 in Sunny Isles Beach. The arbitrator found that the association made a material alteration to the common elements, and that required a 75% vote of the unit owners, where it actually subdivided a room that was previously used for, like, social gatherings into two separate rooms in order to construct a board meeting room. Mm. Again, now even that's a material alteration.
Yeah, and I've got one that's a little similar to the one we had, the question we had from our client with respect to the tennis court here. In this condominium, they found that a conversion of a game room, including a pool table and card table and furniture, into an office, which is basically a different kind of room, is a material change to the common elements.
All right, we'll give some more examples of what is and isn't a material alteration when we get back. Taking your calls, 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. We'll be right back to Big Talk 850 right after this.
Welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850 WFTL. I am Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates. We're taking your phone calls at 877-850-8585. That's 877-850-8585. And we do have Barry from Miami on the line. Hi, Barry.
Hi, how are you? I wanted to thank you for having the program today. I wanted to have you touch upon the next wave of condominium foreclosures by the banks. I understand the courts are really jammed right now with a lot of condominium foreclosures. They're piling up because of the robo-signings last year that the banks stopped of doing. And I also understand that now the banks are starting to refile those cases again. And
Yeah, go ahead.
I understand there's going to be even more. And what is your feeling about more foreclosures coming in, a new wave?
Well, how about this?
Bad.
Yeah, well, I don't think it could be good, obviously, for the real estate market, but I'll say this. I think it was in yesterday's paper, yesterday's Palm Beach Post, I believe, Sharon Bach, who is the clerk of court for Palm Beach County, she was quoted as saying, now check this figure out. Barry, you hit the nail right on the head. From, I think it's March of this year as opposed to March of last year in Palm Beach County, foreclosure filings are up, get ready for this number, 65%.
Yeah.
So it's almost, you know, it's two-thirds more cases this year filed in March of 2012 as opposed to 2011 in Palm Beach County. So Palm Beach County court system is about to get flooded. And by the way, when is this happening? At a time period when the clerk's office's budget is being cut basically 7%. Across the board by 7%.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be even less people managing even more files, which is right. basically the trend we've been dealing with the last 5 years or so. On top of that...
Yeah, but most of the cases are in Dade and Broward County
right.
that
well,
have been piling up, and most of the big foreclosures have been here.
Yeah, well, I haven't seen the stats for Dade and Broward, but I got to think it's pretty much, it's got to come close at least to mirroring what's going on in Palm Beach County. Can't be that much of a difference.
Much of the inventory, though, that was either unsold or sold to investors that are, not planning on keeping those units are in Broward and Dade County. I'd say even more in Dade County than anywhere else. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be the same situation. You're going to have more and more people just defaulting on their loans, people getting foreclosed on, and on top of just the cases piling up to an already overworked court system, you're going to have the court system getting their funds slashed, so you're going to have less clerks, less, people helping, manage the files, and just everything's going to take a lot longer, and it's going to kill the people that are living in their homes and trying to pay their dues and pay their notes and pay their mortgages, and we'll just get in over their head because, there's going to be so many people not paying that they're just going to get killed.
We meet with associations all the time, new associations, and while this moratorium was going on, a lot of associations, unfortunately, just actually stood there and took absolutely no action on so many of their collection cases, just let them sit for a two-year period, and at least at our office, that might not we don't think it's necessarily the best strategy, depending upon what type of community you live in, especially if you live in a nice building, high-rise type of building, in a select area that you may be able to rent the unit out for a lot of money each month. It might pay in your association to beat the banks to the punch, foreclose, and rent that unit out. Again, that might not be the best strategy across the board for every single association, but bottom line is sitting back and doing nothing for 2 years isn't an option either. At least, at a minimum, go into the court, try to get the banks to move forward and finish up their cases. And I don't see... it getting much better for associations within the next year or two. I don't see really how it can, especially again.
So if you had a magic ball, all of you attorneys there had a magic ball, would you say we're looking at another 5 years before 5 to 8 years before?
I don't want to say 5 to 8 years. At least I hope not. Certainly hope I'm wrong in that regard. I should say I'm right.
If I could actually predict where the market was going, I wouldn't, be working for Glazer. I'd probably be like a millionaire, billionaire, or something like that. But, we just got done telling a story that we read in the Sun Sentinel where, the related group's about to build some more high-rises. So that's just going to be more inventory that might go unsold. And, it'll just depress the market even more. So, who knows where this is going.
To me, it boils down to what unemployment figures are going to be to a very large extent. If people have jobs here, okay, we'll fill up the condominium units that are empty. If gambling, I think, would have went a long way towards helping that. But now that that's been knocked out for at least the next year or so, I see no reason why suddenly the job market's going to improve here so dramatically, and these vacant condos are going to be bought up. But, Barry, I appreciate the phone call.
If you look back at one thing,
yes.
The SNL crisis that happened back how many years ago, 20 years ago?
Right.
With the amount of overbuilt. And SNLs that failed and everything else. It's a similar type situation.
Yep.
And I hope it can get better, but it doesn't look like we have any kind of light on the rainbow right now.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is that the housing crisis here is, while it's connected to the overall financial crisis that the country went through back in 2008, we actually, it's that plus a lot of other additional factors, because we have actual inventory down here that people need to purchase. We just can't have it written off as, the government just can't bail out a condo building.
Right.
Some people live in those buildings, and if, 50% of it it's vacant, those people are going to be paying the shortfall of the rest of the building, which is something they didn't bargain for when they purchased their unit. Yeah. So, you know, we actually need living, breathing people to come down here and actually live or at least pay for these units.
Yeah,
we just can't, you know, rely on the market, you know, just rely on the economy turning around.
Yeah, that's why I go Florida, get back to your roots, try to attract the retirees back to this great state. Because bottom line is they come down here and don't compete for jobs. They come down here
and live
and spend money. So I think, again, Florida needs to get back to its roots. But Barry, thank you so much for the phone call today.
Thank you, Barry.
All right, before we go to our next break, let's just do this. We were talking about what is and what is not a material change, and we were talking about what is a material change and would require a unit owner vote. We were giving you some examples, and I just want to finish up what are, again, continuing examples of what you would need a vote of the unit owners for in order to accomplish.
And in Niles versus the Oaks at Hunter's Run Condominium Association, they found that the establishment of a golf cart path across the common elements was a material alteration and substantial addition to the common elements requiring a unit owner vote.
All right, in O'Neill versus Carl Isle East Condo, the arbitrator found that a fence constructed around a recycling dumpster constitutes a material alteration to the common elements. Even that would require a unit owner vote.
And then here's a good one. I'm not going to name the association because this one is actually kind of funny, and it just really sounds so tacky that I love it. The arbitrator found that where the association altered a putting green by removing its artificial turf, and then they put a table and chairs and plants on top of where the artificial turf used to be, they found that that was a material alteration.
Right, so even minor things. And finally, in a case called AN Inc. versus C Place Association, the arbitrator found that replacement of an existing asphalt tennis court with a clay surface tennis court accompanied with an irrigation system, even that constitutes a material alteration to the common elements requiring a vote of the unit owner. So again, even what some of us may consider minor alterations may in fact be considered material, requiring a unit owner vote. Boards, you are best advised to at least get an opinion from your council before making these changes without a unit owner vote. Let's do this. Let's go into our final break of the hour. We'll come back. We'll tell you what you would not need a vote to actually do. And basically, those are repairs. We'll talk about that when we get back. Taking your calls at 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. And we will be back right after this.
Welcome back to the final segment of Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850 WFTL. Again, I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates. The number to call if you have any questions about condos or HOAs, 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585.
All right, so what we've been talking about are what is a material alteration, what is not a material alteration, and we gave some great examples of what constitutes a material alteration that would, in fact, require a unit owner vote before making the change. But again, now let's switch things around and make it a little more complicated, actually. In some circumstances, even though it may appear to be an obvious material alteration, the board can still do it without a unit owner vote if the board is responsible for making a repair to that portion of the property. And a general rule, it basically makes common sense to make that repair in a certain fashion that may even change the look and appearance of the property. And here is what I mean. Let's take a case called Capistrano Condominium versus Joachim. In that case, the arbitrator held that where the board, in furtherance of their duty to protect the common elements, determined that landscaping stones are needed to address erosion problems, the board's statutory duty to preserve the common elements, it overrides any requirement regarding unit owner consent. So notwithstanding the fact that was this place was going to look totally different by putting these stones in, arbitrator says it's okay. Why? Because the board is actually making a repair in that type of circumstance.
Similarly, in an arbitration case called Cundiff v. Flamingo K, the arbitrator held that the installation and expansion of a sprinkler system did not require unit owner approval, where the board was able to show that the area in question had a system in place that was operable and the inoperable
yeah.
and that the vegetation was dying.
Right. So again, keep in mind, basically we're talking about big changes now, but really it's a repair, and that's why the board is getting away with it without a unit owner vote.
All right, in Barnum versus Vista Harbor Association, the unit owner approval not required for installation of a chain link fence where the fence provided security from activities occurring in an adjacent public parking lot, and it was shown to be reasonable and necessary for the security of the association.
All right, now that's asked all the time, you know, by associations, especially in who are in neighborhoods that you know, may be a little dangerous, and can they put up a fence around the community without a vote of the unit owners? And here you can. But remember, just before we went to the break, we were talking about putting a fence around a garbage dumpster.
Right.
That was held to be a little small fence around a garbage dumpster. That was held to be a material alteration. Here, a fence around an entire community, not held to be a material alteration, again, because the arbitrator said this is almost like in the nature of a repair, because the fence was going to actually protect people,
right,
you know, that live in the community. Again, so no unit owner vote required. Okay, in Kreitman versus Decoplage, I think that's a condo that's in South Beach, the arbitrator held that the replacement of a common element acoustic ceiling tiles with drywall and replacement of ceramic floor tiles with marble, that was determined to be necessary maintenance. Again, a repair, and it doesn't require unit owner approval. Why? Because the board here, they were able to show that the drywall is more durable and more cost-effective, and the association shouldn't be required to replace material that's done poorly in the past, that's done a bad job with the same identical material, which, again, is going to be expected to be performed poorly when it has a perfectly good alternative with a comparable fashion. So, again, boards can make these changes. If to put back the same material wouldn't be, in effect, a really dumb decision, because it's going to get ruined all over again.
Yeah. And the same thing happened in a case called Lamar v. Peppertree. The board determined to replace deteriorated wood siding with stucco siding, and the arbitrator held that no vote of the owners was required. The changes were primarily maintenance-related, the arbitrator said, and wood siding is particularly inappropriate here in South Florida, where it attracts insects and is vulnerable to frequent tropical rains.
Right. Now, obviously, that's a big material change. You would think, you'd look at it, it's going to look so different.
Right.
But even though it's going to look so different, again, no vote of the unit owners required. Why? Because it's basically a repair function of the board.
All right. And in Midman versus Sun Valley East Condominium Association, the repair of a pool deck, which was accomplished by the removal of an existing deteriorated Chattahoochee deck and replaced with paver brick, was held to be necessary and not a material alteration, where the paver bricks required less maintenance and had a service life of 2 to 3 times that of the Chattahoochee deck.
That's actually a perfect example. There you have a case where a Chattahoochee deck obviously is going to look a lot different than a paver deck, and even though it's going to be an obvious difference in appearance, held not to be a material alteration. Right. Why? Because to put back Chattahoochee would be dumb. The pavers last longer.
I love that word, Chattahoochee.
Chattahoochee. Yeah, yeah. Karen went right through that without missing a beat. That was impressive. All right, and here's a case that we actually know something about. In Ivanovsky versus Goldenhorn, no unit owner vote was needed for the association to change from carpeting to tile in a room adjacent to the pool, because tile was superior to carpet in that circumstance, right? A room next to the pool, for obvious reasons, tile would certainly work better than carpeting does. And the association can change the style of lighting to provide for more energy-efficient lighting without a vote of the owners as well. However, in this case, this was interesting. The association went very far, though, and they'd made lots of other repairs to the community without getting that unit owner vote. And here's what the arbitrator ruled. Accordingly, it's ordered that the association shall have 60 days in which to prepare and obtain unit owner approval for the changes in the lobby and the color in the hallway wall paint and the exterior paint of the building scheme, failing which the association shall have 90 days thereafter to return the hallway walls and the building exterior to their original color and restore the lobby walls to their original form and condition.
So are you telling me that if the board didn't bother to get the necessary votes to change the color of the exterior of the building, and it costs tens of thousands of dollars to paint the building, the association can be forced to again repaint the building just to bring it back to the same color?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying, Karen. Again, this is something that it really happens all the time. And not getting that required unit owner vote can be very costly to the association. It could be very embarrassing to the association. I mean, can you imagine the money they spent on a paint job for the building? Those, you know, a big building, it's not cheap. And if you change the color of that building without getting the unit owner's vote, I can tell you, you're going to be forced to put it back.
But ultimately, the unit owners paid for that.
The unit owners paid for it, and not only did they pay for it, they're going to pay for it again
for the second
time around. Right. How about we do this? Time's running out. Let's take Robert from Port Charlotte. Robert, you there?
Yes, I am.
How are you, Robert?
Good. We have a situation here where there's a two-story building without an elevator. And the people on the second floor would really like to have some sort of a lift to go from the first floor to the second floor.
Okay.
And some of them are handicapped. Would the government agency Disabilities Act help us in any way?
It might.
Approved?
And I think, Scott, maybe you know this better than I do. If it can actually, I don't think it has to be paid for by the association, but if the unit owners are willing to pay for certain things by themselves and to chip in for it and put in that lift, that might be called a refusal of a reasonable accommodation.
Right.
But I don't think that's what he's asking about right now. It sounds like everybody's on board to put this elevator in. Is that right,
Robert? Well, the people on the second floor are, yes.
Right.
And they would be willing to chip in for it.
Yeah, I think in that type of case, if they're willing to pay for it, it might be considered. And again, call us at the office on this because I'd love to research it too. 855-4-CONDO-CRAZE. Again, 855-4-CONDO-CRAZE. And I'd love to give you an answer on that. My thought is if they're willing to pay for it, then I can tell you I think the federal government would look at it as denial of a reasonable accommodation. That's my guess on that issue.
Everybody got out of church. They're all calling.
Exactly. All right. We got about less than a minute left.
Go!
Nathan from Parkland. Nathan?
Yeah.
You got 30 seconds, Nathan.
If my house needs repainting, according to the association, can they tell me I have to paint it different colors from the ones I bought it at?
Can they make you change? Well, it depends. Has the Architectural Review Committee adopted new rules, new regulations?
I think they did change the colors or something.
Yeah, that's number one. I think that would probably be okay, unless in your governing documents that they don't have the authority to do that, or B, the governing documents specifically outline what those colors have to be. The Architectural Review Committee would not be able to change that again without a vote of all of the members of the community, or at least getting three-quarters of those votes.
That sounds pretty good, considering we don't have any of the info in front of us, Clay.
Right, exactly.
So why don't you give us a call tomorrow, all right, Nathan?
855-4-CONDO-CRAZE. Sorry if you couldn't get to your call today. Thanks for tuning in to another week of Condo Craze and HOAs. Everybody have a great Easter holiday today, and we'll see you again next week.